everyone, and welcome to Total Football Debate, episode 42 of our weekly podcast. It is a momentous occasion because it has been a very long time since we have had this. Much to Costi's delight, all four of us are back on the show. One saving grace for Costi, however, would be his team didn't play. Well, one of the two didn't anyway. For once, we don't have as many games to cover this week.
Peter Fatsiera, he knows exactly what we need.
And he's off.
It took, 37 seconds for him to get one in there? That's record time. Doesn't always happen, does it, Jace? Hey. Tinder profile says that. Anyway, we're going to put Palace last in this segment when they've only got 2 minutes left of the show. That's 2 minutes, Jace, not 20. Okay, cool. So, how we've done it this week is we've put one segment for the FA Cup, the other segment for the Premier League, and all the madness in between. Again, much to Cossie's delight, I'm sure. But, boys, Jason, Cossie, let's welcome back Mr. Daniel Cook, full of his bungy COVID, isn't he? How you doing, Cookster?
It's still there, it's still surviving, so apologies if I do get a bit coughy during it, but we're just hanging on in there.
Was that coffee or was that cocky, considering you're an Arsenal fan?
Well, this week I'm on the cocky side at the minute,
so I don't blame you.
I might be on the coffee side.
So, let's do it in the order as it kind of happened, I guess. So, we are going to start with the FA Cup.
There's for you to, boys to talk about, isn't it?
Let them go first. Come on.
No. Let's do it in order of TV. Chelsea and Borough was the first game. We'll get that out of the way nice and quickly. I personally didn't see much of the FA Cup this week just because things certain things clashed for me.
You haven't seen much of it all tournament. What are you talking about?
What are you talking about? I tell you what, he gets two rounds further and look, he's look at him, eh? Oh, Jesus Christ.
Life.
He is loving life. He's loving life.
On top of the world, mate. On top of the world.
I know. I mean, his first team went out in the third round, so I'm not surprised he's jumped on Palace's bandwagon for the rest of the cup. let's go. Borough against Chelsea then. Anyone catch that game?
Did Chelsea fans?
Oh, Christ. Fair point.
What a fucking joke. Like, oh, can we have it played behind closed doors? So I assume that every single Chelsea game from now on is going to be played behind closed doors.
You fucking bellends.
Seriously.
Well, they're stuck for another month because even if they agree a sale, it's got to be go through with at least a month, hasn't it? So they're still in this trouble for the next month to 6 weeks.
In all seriousness, there are Chelsea fans now, as of yesterday, resorting to buying Crystal Palace memberships to get tickets. They obviously won't get them, though, because you need loyalty points and stuff.
What did you make of Simon Jordan's comments that, for footballing reasons, Chelsea fans should be there?
Yeah, but the problem is, where do you draw the line?
You take politics out of football, because the problem is football fans are ultimately what makes football. I know that the business people won't think that, and I know that most people with business heads on doesn't agree. As much as I don't like their fans, and I think they've been an absolutely disgusting, disgrace, pathetic bunch of you-know-whats this whole time. Not all of them, most of them, just from what you see, just from what you hear, just from what you see, everything. And the fact that they're still wanking off Abramovich and praising his name is absolutely pathetic, but ultimately fans matter more than football. However, in a business sense and a political sense, that's not going to be the case.
I mean, would you want to see a semi-final with just one fan base there?
No, you wouldn't, but the unfortunate...
I would. I'd much rather have Chelsea fans nowhere near the game because they're vile.
The unfortunate thing is, as Costi says, football nowadays is a business, and when they become a business with the amount of money that's involved now, there is a line between what they can and can't get away with. The problem is, we talk about should the fans be punished, right? But then Derby County have had a shit ton of points deducted because they broke business league rules. That, in essence, punishes the fans. So, clubs, Portsmouth, Palace even, there's a number of clubs that have gone into administration because they broke rules as a business unit. They broke rules. Now, no one thought of the fans then because obviously, of course, you deduct points from clubs, you get them relegated, you potentially make them extinct, they have to rebuild again. No one thinks the community's there. I get Simon Jordan's point, but in this situation, it's a very unique situation. It's a very dangerous situation. We don't know how much Abramovich has had, or we do, I don't, you know, we don't know how much of his money has been funneled just because of ties to Russian government. If it has, then Chelsea as a business need to be frozen. And that is, yes, it punishes the fans. Yes, it's wrong because football is a fans game, especially the FA Cup. But that is the nature of the beast, unfortunately.
So the big question is then, the one thing I'm waiting for is Chelsea to come out with this whole, you know, it's not good for the fans, they should be allowed to go. Gift them the tickets then.
Well, until they turn up and start like chanting Abramovich's name again and how amazing they are and how they don't care about the dirty Russian money that they have.
Yeah, man. Why couldn't Chelsea, if they really wanted to, if they can't make money off the tickets, why don't they gift them to the season ticket holders?
And fairness and the spirit of the FA Cup, I think you're right. Gift them them.
Chelsea Football Club is a business, right? They are being sanctioned because they are a business owned by Roman Abramovich, yeah? You allow their fans at the FA Cup final. That is free promotion. That is free advertising. That, in essence, is actively promoting Chelsea Football Club. In essence, you are not sanctioning the business. You are enhancing the brand. You're advertising. You're promoting. You're marketing.
In that case, you take it off TV. I'm sorry. Yeah, you can't tell me that if Chelsea fans are there or not there. If they're not there, the promotion is through the roof.
Yeah, but
because it will be the first FA Cup final or semi-final to not have fans there. Like, I don't get either way. If you want that taken off, then the FA Cup needs to come off TV, full stop. You don't show Chelsea's games.
Chelsea get expelled. Not the FA Cup gets kicked out, but Chelsea get expelled. Because why should the other team suffer?
But all this has got to be a big wake-up call to the Premier League.
Oh, it has.
Look at owners and go through the process of what they're like.
That's a fair question, though. Like, why haven't, when you look at Spartak Moscow, no affiliation with a leader that's contributed towards funding or anything. Just because they are a club in Russia, they've been punished for it. They've been kicked out of the Europa League. Leipzig got a bye. Why haven't Chelsea been punished for being owned by a Russian owner who is known to be in some kind of affiliation with Putin? How is that any different from just being located in Russia?
Because the government is scared. I'll tell you now. The government didn't want to sanction half the people they've sanctioned because of economic ramifications. If they sanction Chelsea Football Club, they've already sanctioned Roman Abramovich. They sanction Chelsea Football Club, it impacts Chelsea. It impacts the local area. It impacts employment. It impacts the Premier League. That then implicates and has a domino effect on TV revenues, on game schedules. The list is endless. The government have purely done this to be seen to be doing something, in my opinion. They won't go full throttle, because if they do, then if Chelsea Football Club end up in administration, I wouldn't give a shit, but it would be a disaster on the government's hands, that a multi-million pound football club with fans, with however many years of history, has gone into admin because of one owner.
20 years of history, yeah?
Yeah. But as I said a couple of weeks ago, and to Cookie's point, it's an important point about the Premier League going forward, because now you're in a situation where Chelsea, if they can't have fans at the FA Cup, if they are punished more severely than they have been now, they'll turn around and say, well, how did Newcastle's bid get put through when they got rejected three times? It's going to open up a massive, massive can of worms.
Fans being fans as well, there's always a means of getting the ticket, which could be dangerous. So on a safety level, you could even say that the fans need to be segregated. They need to give tickets away because fans will find a way of getting into that stadium no matter what you do.
If you can't sell them to Chelsea fans, I do not want to see a half-full Wembley full of Palace fans and no fans. You put them on general sale on the FA website then, and you let spectators go and fill the other half of the stadium.
That doesn't solve the problem, though. You'll have Chelsea fan Joe Bloggs pretend he's a Liverpool fan.
Yeah, but the money would go to the FA, though, wouldn't it?
What they could do is, if, like Scott says, right, these are open to Chelsea fans for the other half of Wembley, and all the profits go to the Ukrainian victims. And that would be the huge nail on the head, because you think, well, Russian owners linked with Putin, this money for the Chelsea game goes to the Ukrainian charities and, you know, the welfare of Ukrainian families. That would just be the icing on the cake. But because money's involved and the FA are involved, I don't think that will happen. But wouldn't that just be the perfect solution to all of this?
Well, Simon Jordan, I think, mentioned, I won't linger on it for too long, he mentioned clubs could even choose to bring in their own revenue by selling the tickets for Chelsea. You know, Palace turned around and said, we'll set up something on our website to allow you to buy your tickets through our stadium. All of a sudden, they've got all the ticket revenue from... that. He said it is possible. They can do that.
Take the fans out of it for a second, though. If, say, Z Premier League's club did that, doesn't that then contradict their message about supporting Ukraine? Because they're essentially supporting a football club that has been punished because their potential owner has potential...
I mean, my only issue with this is, where does the buck stop?
Well, this is the problem, isn't it? This is the problem.
I mean, I'm not sticking up for Chelsea here. I couldn't think of a better club for it to happen to personally. But hey ho, don't hate me for it. But my only point is, I mean, where does this buck stop? You know, do we not affiliate with Man United for a certain individual because of what he's done? Do we not affiliate with, I know we tongue in cheek say this, but Brighton? I think you've got to be very careful that, yes, the majority, as we've seen, you know, I bet that, you know, that restaurant owner abroad is laughing his head off right now at what's happening with Chelsea right now, you know, because they didn't care. Ooh, then, did they?
That's one of what? One of 20 examples you want to give?
Many. So, the train,
yeah,
everything.
Exactly.
But there are still fans. There's still fans out there.
Genuine people, genuine fans.
You can't hold them responsible for being. This is that fine line with Russia in general. Russia are getting this massive, and it's the only way you can deal with it. But I can't imagine, there are people in Russia right now that are sick at what is going on right now. And I think we've got to be very careful that you don't just all of a sudden label people with this derogatory term just because of what's going on.
You can't generalise. Fans hate each other. Fans have banter with each other. You know, some of my really good friends are Ipswich fans, and, you know, they'll call me a wanker at the game and then we're sharing a pint afterwards. You know, some of them are they're great people. They're people at the end of the day. So you can't generalise. And, yeah, I do. I'm not saying that all Chelsea fans are wankers, not saying that all Chelsea fans are this, this and that. However, when I was at Carrow Road, and it was even more sort of, you know, up in the air as to what's going to happen with Abramovich, and he'd just been sanctioned, and it was like early on in the process of what's happened, 95-98% of them were chanting his name 7, 8, 9, 10 times during the game, and it was full on arrogance, full on praise, full on everything. And you just think, really, guys? I don't like to generalize, but if you were there, that atmosphere was absolutely buzzing in support of Roman Abramovich.
Yeah,
and that to me is just unforgivable.
You've also got to remember that when we talk about people keeping their job, at the end of the day, the shop's shut. They've lost. They're not doing anything right now. You've got a manager that didn't sign up for this, who's been fantastic, to be fair. You've got players that have given their all for that club, regardless of what you think of them on the pitch or whatever. They didn't sign up for this. The only people that should be punished are the ones that knew what they were getting into, you know. And at the end of the day, they need to look a little bit further when you look at these companies like Sky Sports News, who were basically tossing themselves off on TV when this money came in from Chelsea being taken over. Because it was like, oh, look at all this money. Look at the headlines we can write. Even videos of it when someone publicly put out on Sky Sports News that he didn't like it and that there was no reason why Roman Abramovich wanted Chelsea other than to just cover up loads of different things. And you've got Jim White sitting there bashing it off.
It was in everyone's faces. It was spelled out at the time. And it's just taken, what, 17, 18 years to come to life.
Yep. Yep. So, unfortunately, Borough, you know, there was a match played and, you know, everyone was hoping Borough would go through. It's not the case. Chelsea are now in the semi-final. Up against... He's underwater.
Are you drowning, Kiki? Have you got COVID or are you just drowning? Are you wanking with a bag over your head for maximum impact?
Hey, I'm waiting to give you all this praise after you dumped Everton out here. It was impressive.
It sounds like he's in a box. He's going to have to adjust.
COVID's made it hilarious.
Adjust your headphones, that is, not your hand. Look, you did. I don't know where you want to start with this because I can see this derailing off topic towards an ex-Chelsea player, that's for sure. So let's talk about the fixture as a whole, and then you can go off and start giving a certain someone an absolute rinsing, eh?
Aside from the first 20 minutes, we were at, that's probably one of the best games I've seen us play this season. That's not even a understatement. Obviously, off the back of drawing 0-0 to Man City, I know Everton are in poor form and stuff, but to go into that game, an FA Cup semi-final, and play the way we did, immense. And do you know what? I'm going to say it. Credit to Patrick Vieira. I don't think it's funny how the media have gone very, very quiet on Vieira, because it's very easy to forget that when he was in charge, I was one of them. I laughed at the appointment. But also, all the media was like, Palace are relegated. Vieira's going to be the first manager sacked. And here we are, FA Cup semi-final, potentially mid-table finish in the Premier League. Palace are a joy to watch at the minute. It's a good time to be a Palace fan, to be fair. I still have to re-watch Zaha's goal for the third because I wondered what the hell happened. I thought Elise had skied it, but it bounced off the post and just landed to Zaha, which is...
Everyone thought it went out. I thought it went out for that third goal, and it... Camera kind of panned as if it was to say it was a goal kick, and next thing you know, everyone's cheering.
It, and then all of a sudden, it cut to Zaha celebrating. I wonder what the hell was going on. But no, look, credit to Vieira. Everton, woeful. And let's get on to that arrogant Tory twat, Frank Lampard.
Oh, God, here we go.
His post match comments, I tell you now, leave a lot to be desired. Talk about a sore loser. What was it he said? They lost to a goal from a corner, a fluky goal, an average goal, and a game where Palace weren't that great. And he looked like a bitter, bitter twat. I don't know if any of you guys saw the interview, but he looked like he wanted to cry.
Not bad goals, really, for four.
Well, yeah. But the outburst, I found the outburst he went on post-match in the full interview to the press very, very interesting, accusing his players of a lack of bollocks, which... I'm intent on agreeing with. Clearly, they don't have the fight.
Well, they must take up to the manager then.
But when you're a manager and you've only been there for how many games? 8 or 9 games, if that. It's very, very telling. And it's not just the things he said. It's the tone in which he said it. That's the problem. As in, he's tried the tactics. He's tried everything. He can't basically... force a horse to drink water. He's told them everything. He can't get them up for the games all the time. He can't keep company. He's basically chucked them all under the bus. So I think it'll be very, very interesting.
Because he wants to divert the blame because he's tactically inept.
Exactly, exactly. He was absolutely... In fact, even ITV, I think, highlighted it because he made some subs at half-time. They were like, oh, he's going to a back four. He stuck to the back three. So they even highlighted his own... shortfall before a ball would have been kicked in the second half. But I think they're in big, big, big trouble after that outburst. I don't think that'll go down well with the players. I think that stinks of an arrogant manager with a self-entitlement. And I think it's going to go down like a shit show. I think their league form is now going to go off the boil. It is anyway. But, you know, I think he's lost... Sounds like he's lost the dressing room and he's a man under a lot of pressure. But as for Vieira and Palace... If it wasn't for Hasenhüttl at Southampton, although they are crashing back down to earth, I think he should be in reverse shout for Manager of the Year. I mean, you know, 4 points off Man City, 2 clean sheets off Man City, in the top half of the table, FA Cup semi-final in his first season for a young manager like that.
Considering the overhaul that he had to do with your squad as well.
Unproven players. I mean, immense. Absolutely immense.
The one thing I'd say with Lampard is, as much as I don't think he's got the capability at all to be successful, he strikes me as one of these, from what I've seen so far anyway. I think I mentioned this on last week's show with you, Koss, and while Jason was watching City and Palace. There are certain managers that struggle to comprehend why certain players can't do what they used to do so well as players. Lampard strikes me as one of those. The only thing that I would say, just to defend Lampard, is I don't think there are many managers Everton could have right now that would keep them up.
I think if Rafa was still there, yeah, it would be hostile, but he would not get Everton Football Club relegated, personally.
I still think they would have.
I don't think Rafa ruined them. I think they've been ruined for a long time.
He got rid of all their stuff.
I also don't think, to be honest, Lampard was the fans' choice. I don't think the board wanted Lampard. The board wanted someone else. I think Lampard was the fans' choice. And ain't it funny how the fans have already turned on Lampard? And, you know, but as Scott says, I said this at the beginning of the season, that it's been a long time coming. Their recruitment on paper looks great because they've spent a shit ton of money. But actually, when you look at the money they've spent, it's been on the best of the best from the bottom clubs. It's been on, you know, Richarlison having a hot streak over a couple of months at Watford, and then they bought him the following year. It's been all over the place.
When Benitez was in charge of Everton, he didn't have a fully fit squad for pretty much the whole time he was there. All those players have now come back, all their big guns, and all of a sudden they're even worse than they were post-Rafa. I mean, so what does that tell you?
Benitez, I don't think, was the problem. He got rid of the director of football, and I suspect that's because he turned around and said to Bill Kenwright and the rest of the board, he's a shit director of football, he's not done the business. He's gone for, like, you know, he got a lot of kudos for bringing in the likes of Alan and James Rodriguez, and who did well to a point until Benitez came in for whatever reason, Luca Dina, but they've all gone off the boil. You know, big names on paper, yeah, it should work, but it hasn't.
Do you know what? And it's weird that we're going to come to Everton in the second segment as well, because we forget they had a midweek game and they won a game that I did not see them winning. And I think out of the two, they would probably be more happy in a weird way that they won that game rather than the FA Cup, to be honest with you. But we'll come to that later. The only thing that that's given me worrying vibes for Everton is Everton strike me as that club that if they go down, I could see us sitting there in the next 5 years and they're in League One.
Yeah.
They give me that Sunderland vibe, Birmingham, where they started buying. And it's an interesting point as to whose fault it is. They started buying players that I personally feel they had no right to be buying. They were almost trying way too hard to get that what-if signing in, and they've actually put themselves in a really bad situation where I think they could have signed other players and just kept that top eight solidified, but instead they've tried to go for Champions League like Leeds did, like Newcastle tried to do. You know, Sunderland bought them big players, Birmingham, Portsmouth, they all done it. And you've only got to look at where they are now. I mean, Leeds have come back, but how long did it take Leeds?
Everton's biggest mistake, getting rid of Sam Allardyce, because they are arrogant enough to think that they were too big for him. He came in, he did a job, he kept them up. And when he kept them up, they said, thank you very much, we don't need you anymore, we're going to the next level. If they kept him and recruited the type of players they needed and bought in, I think they would be they'd be closer to Europe than they would be now.
How interesting is it that West Ham almost nearly done that with David Moyes as well? They let him go, didn't they?
I was about to say exactly the same thing.
U-turn a season later and go, or six more, whatever it was, and go, actually, we'll bring him back.
He's case in point. You know, David Moyes and Allardyce get a lot of criticism, right? But Allardyce, you look at the job he did at West Ham over the years in particular, you look at the job he did at Bolton, you look at the job that he did even at Palace, and
Blackburn, all of them.
Blackburn. David Moyes, and he had them always on the periphery of top eight in Europe. You look at David Moyes now. David Moyes got a rough ride because he took that Sunderland job on, but that Sunderland job is impossible at the time for anyone because no one, apart from, ironically, Allardyce, managed to grab it by the horns and push on. But David Moyes got a lot of stick, but I said it before when we touched on history in the past. Look at what David Moyes did with Everton back in the day. They were playing like Barcelona at one point and they were in like Europa League. I think they qualified for Champions League or they got close to it. They really pushed that top four. And it's no surprise that David Moyes now has just been left alone to crack on with his job. And look at West Ham. Yeah, they've tailed off, but it's only in hindsight of, you know, the state of their squad. But, you know, sometimes an old hand is the best hand. And I think with Everton, they've gone for the glitz and the glam, gone for signings, as you say, Scott, that they're not necessarily on paper entitled to. You know, they got Marcel Brands as a director of football and thought they were going to be signing, you know, Lozano's from PSV at the time.
They went and got Ancelotti, didn't they?
Yeah, they got Ancelotti, which...
They had the manager as well.
Look, arguably, with Ancelotti, they were unlucky because I don't think anyone expected Real Madrid to come in for him the way they did. That probably did screw them up. But that's what happens when you're a club that plays Everton.
Yeah. Well, we'll talk about Everton in Premier League terms in the second half of the show. We've got two more FA Cup fixtures to touch on. I mean, Southampton, Man City ended up a bit of a washover. I was hoping Southampton were gonna continue their good little run in FA Cup history, and unfortunately, they fell short. Man City ended up pretty much taking them to the cleaners, to be honest. Not much to say there. I mean, Southampton now focused on the league, hopefully steady the ship a little bit, starting to leak a few more goals once more. I think they just need to be a bit concerned. We do come on to a game, however, that started off in real good faith, you know, with Nottingham Forest doing their little gesture to Liverpool with the whole seat situation where they left a certain amount of seats empty. But I couldn't believe it when I turned over and saw at 70 minutes, it's still 0-0. And then obviously VAR comes to contention again. Now, how do you think Forrest feel about that game?
Well, you know, my uncle is a Forrest fan and I asked him this exact question. He said he absolutely loved it, loved every minute of it, went toe-to-toe, one of the best teams in the world, and gave them a good fight. And they had three first-choice players out as well. And when I watched the game myself, obviously, they had some really good chances, to be honest, at 0-0 when Zinchenko, if that's how you say it, he had a superb chance from a right-hand side, across from the right-hand side, came in, first time shot went just wide, and then Yates had a tame header in the end. However, it's maybe played a little bit behind him. If it was had a little bit more run onto that, that could have really tested Alisson. The penalty, he said, in real time, it looked like a penalty, and he's not seen it on VAR as well, because he gave me a good Arsene Wenger response with that. However, I'm going to try and be a bit impartial. It'll be one of those situations where if it happened to the team I want to win, you'll be screaming for it. You look at the replay, you think, oh, maybe not. However, you've seen them given. You've seen Salah get penalties for much less, but he was playing for it. He left his opposite foot towards the goalkeeper, which is the most unnatural thing you could imagine. And yeah, it was an entertaining game. I think I speak for a lot of people saying I'd love to see Forest in the Premier League again. Their stadium, their fans, the atmosphere, absolutely incredible. And yeah, I've got nothing but praise for Forest. And as I say, I really hope they go up. And if they'd have had Cooper from the start of the season, I think they would have won the league three or four times over, considering where they were when he took over at the start of the war, a few games into the season.
Interesting on the whole VAR angles as well, isn't it? You know,
because
it's very, 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 you know, misleading. And I think if they can't, I don't understand how it's not come into play yet, where these overhead cameras are in play, where you can see it from above to know, or they can do that computer generated image that they do with the goal line technology. And because it, from the angle they show, I know angles are deceiving, it looks offside. And you've seen other goals given offside using those sort of angles. So it's really odd, isn't it?
It doesn't just look offside. It looks clear as day. There's some which you can think, oh, that's close. But you look at that. You look at the still frame from that. I know, again, perspectives and et cetera, et cetera. But you look at the still frame from that and you just think, what the fuck? Really?
You know, and it'd be really interesting to know how they came to the conclusion it wasn't. Is there something they've got? Have they got different angle? Well, I don't know, but I think we need to know that, because if they're going to show that angle, I'm sorry, I don't understand how you calculate it's not.
This is my argument as to why we spoke about this in one of the pods, I think, but this is my argument as to why it needs to be like rugby. It needs to be transparent. It needs to be sound on. It needs to be broadcast to every single person, because those lines in that offside rule, I'm sorry, but it's complete and utter bollocks, because they basically decide where the line is drawn. They decide the angle that people see. It's absolute, it's horseshit. It's crap. And yet we are
manipulated. It looked like that was being manipulated at the time.
Yeah. And I don't watch enough of Serie A and La Liga and the rest of them, but I'll tell you one thing for free. They implement it a hell of a lot better than we do. We're the richest league in the world. The FA Cup is one of the greatest competitions in the world. The FA get a ton of funding. It needs to be used properly. And that's officiating and refereeing in this country is an absolute, when you think of the money that we have in the game, is an absolute joke.
At least we've got some good news, eh? We've got Mr. Arrogant retiring at the end of the season. Thank fuck for that.
he's quite disappointed, actually, because that was always quite entertaining to watch him.
Oh, no. Dickhead. Biggest dickhead there is. You know, I've never seen someone get so trigger happy at pulling out a card. And yeah, at least he can go to support Tranmere every week now. Anyway, probably quickest first half of a segment we've done, to be fair. So we go on to the middle segment, which gives us enough time to do your favourite part of the show, Cos.
I'm surprised that this wasn't the longest ever segment, considering with Jason and
it,
obviously...
It was almost,
he's got a second go at this, yet. Hold on, he's got a second go.
It was
go.
Almost too comfortable for Palace, yeah. That actually it became not worth talking about.
I think he started writing a dissertation about it.
That's very true. And the other thing is, I didn't want to bore you guys because, you know, Norwich went out a couple of rounds ago, Spurs are out, Arsenal are out. Cookie's biggest worry is the fourth place trophy that's on available every year, which, I mean, look, the fact that that's even a trophy.
I'm excited for this. First time we've competing for this for 6 years.
I mean, it's embarrassing, isn't it, really?
Only took £150 million in the summer.
Let's calm down, Jace. I mean, look,
I was going to say,
you and Brighton have been competing for the Who Finishes Above Who trophy for the past three seasons. But anyway, Brighton don't win it very often, though, so that's good news for you.
Not at all. It's not even a trophy. It's not even a debate or a conversation.
And he's off.
A bunch of it. They can't even fill their stadium. You've seen their stadium. They're declaring full attendances and half-empty stadium.
Don't worry, Jace. We'll get to Brighton shortly. Don't worry. Seagull Simon is waiting in anticipation. What we need to do first, however, is do predictions, which unfortunately, Cookie, you wasn't on last week. You know, it appeared you were too unwell to get onto predictions. So we've got to kind of come up with a resolution for you as to how you recover from that missing game week. So let's get these out of the way, because Cookie won't be too happy to hear there was quite a few points dished around. Start with Leicester and Brentford. Not one of us didn't get a point. Cossy and Jason, you got 1 point each for saying 3-1 and 2-0. Leicester Brentford, of course, to my knowledge, ended up finishing 2-1. So that means I get 3 points there. So it kind of puts me in a pretty strong position, I must say. We then go on to the next game, which was Arsenal-Liverpool. Again, not one of us didn't get a point, but Cossie, you were the one that got the correct scoreline. You said 2-0 Liverpool, which puts you in real good standing. Me and Jace get a point each because we did predict that Liverpool would win. Would have been interesting to know, Cookie, whether you would have gone with your heart.
I said 2-0 Liverpool, ironically.
Oh, right.
Actually, said that was going to be 2-0
Liverpool. Everton, Newcastle. Who would have thought? None of us got any points in that one. I did not see that coming, which is what we've got to come to in the second part of the show. That stumped a lot of us. So, that currently leaves the situation as Jason and Cookie on 50 points, Cossy on 52 points, and myself on 64. Now, Cookie, for yourself, do you want to wait for double game week or double points on a Premier League? Or do you want to take advantage, which we've never done before, of predicting England's results?
No, I'll wait for the double game week, I think, mate.
You'll wait for double points, yeah? Yeah, all right, we'll give you double points on that. Fair enough. Right. Well, in that case, we come to the wonderful Wheel of Wonder. This week's will has three tournaments and one random topic. Random topic being personal opinion. So, you know, Cossie might like that one, depending on what it is. You know, it could be about El Clasico. It could be about the Rome Derby. It could be about other topics. Who knows? But the other three topics are tournament football. So, who's going first?
Go on, then.
Jason wants it, okay. Jason, your Wheel of Wonder this week is... Can you talk to us about what is going on in the Europa League?
There is a good story in that at the minute, isn't there? North of the border.
I love how Jason says, who cares? Because it would be difficult to comprehend Palace even getting anywhere.
Hey, win the FA Cup and you're in there.
We're closer to Europe than Spurs at the minute.
Are you? Okay. You got to get past two teams first, mate.
Europa League.
Do you want us to spell it for you? Because I know you probably haven't written Europe down before. Or...
The Europa League is actually quite a good thing to talk about at the minute.
Great, great actually a little tournament
bit,
this year.
A little bit I'm jealous that you've got it.
Not going to lie. I think the Europa League is doing wonders for its reputation at the moment. It has done the last few seasons, I think.
Come on then, let's have it, Punky Boy.
Right, you've got a minute. You can approach it whatever way you want, mate. Whether it's results, whether it's fixtures, doesn't matter. Stories, go for it. So you'll be starting in 3, 2, 1, you're off.
Well, in the European trophy that no one cares about, it's been quite the eventful tournament. So let's start off with our own Rangers, north of the border there. The wee lads won 4-2 on aggregate against Red Star Belgrade and are through to the quarterfinals. Atalanta through to the quarterfinals comfortably. Barcelona, resurgent in La Liga, straight through to the quarterfinals with a hard-fought victory over Galatasaray. Braga, arguably throwing a bit of a shock there against Monaco, 3-1 on aggregate. Frankfurt, performers in Bundesliga, maybe to some surprise, beat Betis on aggregate. Lyon eliminated Porto. Leipzig got a bye into the next round, thanks to Putin. And West Ham, what a story that is. Yarmolenko striking the final iron in Sevilla's. Arguably the well-seasoned Sevilla, who would have been favourites to the tournament, they are now not out. So West
Time! You wanted to get the fixtures in then, didn't you? That was it, and that would have been a lovely summary.
I did that pretty well, didn't I?
You did do quite well. Give you your due, you done very
Rangers,
well.
Rangers, what a story, Rangers.
I so wanted a Rangers-West Ham. That's one of those where I could have seen a rivalry kick off from that. Hey, Rangers have got a healthy draw there. Braga, not a bad draw, but can't see them getting past Atalanta or Leipzig if that's who they end up getting.
West Ham-Barcelona semi-final, though, right?
No, I want West Ham out in this round. I don't want them anywhere near it.
You know, Cookie, he wants Barcelona to go all the way because just like Marseille... His beloved
Beyonce. His former players. Hey, Aubameyang, that's another story in itself. How about
that? He didn't want
to be there, did he? Cool. What an embarrassment. That was. Right, next one. Who's going next?
Go on, I'll go next, then I can rest my throat.
Come on, then. Your will is. Ooh, he got the random topic.
No.
this is a matter of personal opinion, mate. No rights or wrongs, but it'd be interesting if you've stayed on top of it with further news today. We want your personal opinion on the England squad.
Oh, there's been some news about that, isn't there?
Yeah, there is.
I've got to get this right for him now, because if not...
Mention to a certain right-back as well, who's got into the England squad since leaving fucking Spurs. I tell you, good on him. Deserves it and all. Over another Kyle who can't get in it.
Okay, go on then. Let's get this over with.
Right. You have a minute to summarise this. Give us your thought on the England squad in 3, 2, 1. You're off.
So, overall, the original squad, the fact that Sancho didn't make the squad, I feel a little bit unjustified, given the fact of Grealish's form lately. I mean, Ollie Watkins really ahead of Sancho, but whatever. Rashford, rightfully so, out of the squad. And there's been some lovely little call-ups for our mate Jason, where he's got his boys Mark Gehi, Tyreek Mitchell, Gallagher, and there's one more I think you had, didn't there?
No, just somewhere. Three lines.
Oh, three lines. Well, we had four. Unfortunately, Ramsdale did miss out because of injury. However, on the whole, for even though they're friendlies and mean nothing games, it's a good opportunity for some of these players to get on the pitch, you know, show what they're all about. I mean, it's
time. I'm surprised you didn't go in on a certain slab egg, to be honest with you. But fair. Got the honourable mention. Didn't mention Walker Peters, so I'm disappointed. Maguire, Mings.
He shouldn't be nowhere near it.
Terrible. Right. On to the last two, Koss. Would you like the decision made for you, or would you want to go first?
If I go first, there's a bit more tension.
All right, I'll let you go then. So, your will is... You'll be happy. You've got to talk about what is going on in the Champions League. Quarterfinals it is now, isn't it?
I think I'm ready.
Then you will talk about the Champions League in 3, 2, 1. You're off.
Well, first of all, the last trophy that Manchester United could win, and I speak for everyone that were really, really, really gutted to see them go out to Atletico Madrid. My heart bleeds for them. What's the point of even talking about the next round when Manchester United aren't in it? But hey-ho, we will do. So Chelsea, Villarreal, Benfica, as I said, Atletico Madrid, Man City, that's Man City, not Manchester United, Man City, Real Madrid, Bayern Munich just getting through against Salzburg, and obviously Liverpool. And the next round is obviously Benfica, Liverpool, which you'd think that's perfect for Liverpool. Man City, Atletico Madrid, which I think a lot of people will be looking at as the main tie. Maybe Chelsea, Real Madrid as well. That's going to be huge if Chelsea can get fans there. Villarreal, Bayern. And yeah, what do we think? So I personally think that's Liverpool's trophy personally, not because I've got my red tinted glasses on, but it would be incredible for Klopp to... He's won it before. He knows what he's doing.
Robin sorting the wins of Man United fans there, wasn't he?
I could have just thought... I was tempted just to do that for a minute.
I thought you was. I thought you was.
The fickle PSG fans.
I didn't quite get onto that. That was hilarious.
Story of the tournament.
Benzema's hat-trick was brilliant.
Yeah.
The second and third goals, what was it, 30 seconds? Not even that.
Between it, yeah.
I don't think they'll ever win it.
So that leaves me with the wonderful topic of the Europa Conference League to discuss. Fantastic. This won't take me very long. There is still one English side left in it. No, not Spurs, as everyone thought it would be. I tell you what, I'll mention this, but if they get there, if they do it, God help them, they'll be putting a statue up, won't they? Bloody fickle fans. Anyway, who's counting me in for a minute?
Go on then. 3, 2, 1, go.
So it's quarterfinal stage of the Europa Conference League. Here we are with all the teams that couldn't make the Europa League or Champions League, let's be honest. But some big names there nonetheless. Marseille and PAOK are one game. Feyenoord and Slavia Prague. Glimt and Roma. Roma probably being one of the favourites just because they've got one of the best tournament football managers there. Take the hint, Spurs. And Leicester and PSV. Brendan Rodgers will be bashing himself off if he can get to Europa League conference semi-final, that's for sure. I know there's a few of us on here that will be hoping that will not happen. So that is pretty much all I need to say. Nothing else, no, nothing of relevance in the Conference League. There we go. We'll leave it as that.
Done in record time, 48 seconds. Well done.
Thankfully, we haven't got any respective clubs for these two knobheads in this segment, Cookie. However, our own had a double game week, so we will be talking about these two. So let's start with Mr. Cookie's Arsenal. Midweek game against Liverpool. I saw him note that down as a free hit. And he probably after that, considering he thought it would be a free hit, felt a little bit aggrieved. And then, of course, got one over on a very, very bitter Steven Gerrard. It seems like the ex-midfielders had a bit of sour grapes this week because he did not like that at all, which got Gabby Abonghore in a bit of a stir as well. Overcame the hero Laura Woods to Arsenal's rescue once again. Amazing how someone could just make Arsenal sound okay, and it went, you know, someone like Laura Woods just is interesting, but she only negative
could,
about
she could
her,
talk about
fair.
Anything. She could talk about anything, and I'll be like, yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I agree.
100% Norwich deserve to be in the conference. Laura.
I completely agree. It doesn't have to be her to say that, to be fair.
So, Cookie, where are we at? You haven't been on the show for a little while. Where are we at with your old Arsenal Football Club? 2-0 defeat to Liverpool, 1-0 victory over Aston Villa.
Well, it's like I said, didn't it? Against Liverpool, it was a free hit. And in fairness, we did go toe-to-toe with them. However, you always felt that they were always going to have an extra gear. And unfortunately, I'm sick of the sight of Jota. Even though Ramsdale should have done better with the goal, it was straight at his near post. You know, he's diving one, he's shifted his weight onto one way, thinking he's going to cut across. You got to have your near post covered and that. They did make the emphasis on that's the difference between what it's like battling for, what, fifth, sixth, and going for the title when you've got Alisson 3 minutes before making a one-on-one save with Odegaard, where he should have probably scored. Because if that goes 1-0 Arsenal, then that's a different game. But there you go. It is what it is. And then they pushed for the second and bullied their way through for the second goal.
Got two clubs, obviously, we've got to talk about here in a weird way, because Arsenal was a double game week, so the majority is going to be about Arsenal. We've also got Liverpool to talk about, and we've got Villa to talk about as well. I'll be interested to come to Jason in a second, seeing as, and Tossi, to be fair, seeing as Klopp's comments about the lower league clubs and the top clubs. So I'll be interested to get their opinion on that. That came across as I'm a real nice guy, but I'm going to be arrogant as shit here, but I'm still a nice guy, because that was like almost a way of saying
the lower league clubs don't get international call-ups. They're shit. We do.
Well, it'll be interesting hearing what Jason thinks about that, bearing in mind I'd say half of Palace's team, of their main players, are likely to be called up for international football, but you don't take that into consideration. But let me just get to Cookie first, and then I'll come to let you two have a go at that from a Norwich and Palace perspective, because I do feel like that will rub teams up the wrong way. So yeah, to be fair, I did watch that game. I was actually in a pub watching the Arsenal-Liverpool game because went out and it landed in there. And I've got to be honest, Arsenal gave it a great go. I thought I was about to witness goal of the season with Martinelli with that run down the touchline. It was stunning.
I don't care what Klopp says. He says that he's one of the best defenders, blah, blah, blah. Martinelli had him on toast all night.
Yeah, it was interesting actually seeing Arsenal fans that you know, at the end of the day, this is where the big team mentality comes in. And I think Spurs and Arsenal can take a bit of note here, how Arsenal felt like they should have, you know, they should have had 3 points just because they played well. Unfortunately, it's a points game.
It didn't work like that.
Spurs and Arsenal have been preaching that for years. We play really well. It's about the games that you don't play well and you still win. that makes you title winners.
That's exactly what I said. Martinelli, I'm a big fan. I think he's a very, very good player. But ultimately, he beat Trent Alexander-Arnold a couple of times, nutmegged Henderson, and all of a sudden he should
just
be on the winning
team. Just got called up to the Brazil squad, the first team squad as well. That's how highly rated they rate him.
Like I said, I do rate him. I think he's a very good player. However, when Arsenal used to be, like when Thierry Henry would be such a sexy footballer, he was absolutely superb with the way that they played. It would be the equivalent of, I don't know, Dirk Kuyt, I don't know, playing well against one of the best players and just being like, yeah, but Dirk Kuyt had a great game for me. It's just like, well, Arsenal have fallen a little bit when they're talking about an individual playing well against a team that won 2-0 at the end of the day. I think that's them. Though I do agree and do like him, like I said, I completely admit that he's a great player. He may have had him on toast a couple of times and nutmegged Henderson, but ultimately he lost 2-0 and it's completely irrelevant. I know Arsenal fans are bigging it up, but that just shows, in my opinion, that their expectation has dropped so much when they're talking about one player playing well against one of the best players in the world.
It wasn't just one player, though. It wasn't just one player who played well that night. There was there was pretty much a whole team, apart from, I don't know, a 10-15-minute period when Liverpool have got that extra gear.
I can't remember who it was that said it, and they made a very valid point. Arsenal played so well that they lost. That was how he summarised. It might have even been Simon Jordan. And you sit there and you go, it's so true, isn't it? You played that well that you lost.
Yeah.
Reminds how me, can you true. Argue that? It's 100% a Spursy thing as well. You played that well. You didn't come away with any points. Didn't even draw. Yeah.
This is what I've still got reservations on Arteta. He then went and complained and sarcastically went to the Premier League. Oh, he's got 2 or 3 days. A Saturday lunchtime game.
I'm so glad you mentioned this.
And
actually,
I was just like, well, hang on a minute. We're playing for a place in Europe where you're going to play every 3 days.
He's come out and said that Arsenal have got a run of games when they had no European football. And let's be honest, this whole situation was brought up from previous cancellations.
Yeah, which one of them we asked for. So what is he? I don't understand why he's moaning about.
We'll come to that again because it ties in with what Klopp says. So again, it's this top of the table arrogance, which you got to be very careful. You know, if we don't think Klopp has got a lot to say about it, bearing in mind he's in Europe fighting for nearly every trophy. Everything. What the hell is Arteta banging on about? Like, I mean, I'm sorry, that's a dangerous game as well. Before we do that, though, let's talk about another manager who is very petty with the whole Arsenal-Aston Villa game, which further solidified Aston Villa in your eyes, Cookie. I know you love them anyway.
God almighty.
You won. Fair play to you. You won that game. A game that you know, it could have been a slippery slope. Villa, very bipolar at the moment. What did you make of Gerrard's comments?
Oh, it's nice to know how many injuries he's had over the years. I mean, it's an odd one because it was almost like he was trying to deflect the fact that his team were bad for most of that game. And the fact that, again, Saka, like Martinelli did the other night, he just couldn't handle him. I mean, what Ashley Young was saying after the game as well. This whole thing about celebrating wins as well, right? When is it a crime to start celebrating a win? I don't understand. It's like, for years, they've criticised Arsenal for not showing no passion, no character, no spirit, no nothing. Now we've got a team that wants to fight and celebrate. Like, even, you know, when Ramsdale makes a save or a block's made and they start celebrating. Do you know what I mean?
The only thing I would say is just notice the only people that complain, because this happens all the time. The only people that complain about the win are the people that are on the receiving end.
On the receiving end. Yeah.
The only people complaining about Arsenal winning that game were Villa X or Villa Current.
Yeah.
Same, I remember Klopp saying it about West Brom, I think, when West Brom got a draw. I'm sorry, you do not know how much it means to West Brom at that moment in time that they've got a draw. They did never think they were had. When you put it on paper, how many points you have at the end of the season, that Liverpool point was not there. So you celebrate it like it's your be-all, end-all, because that could save your job. Jason will know it from Hodgson days and whatnot. You know, there are games that you have to... He celebrated Man City win and draw. I'm sorry, you celebrate that like it means the world to you, because that's 4 points you did not think you'd have at the beginning of the season. And when teams say, oh, they celebrate it like it's a trophy, it's bollocks. It's a cover-up because they're embarrassed that they've lost the game at the end of the day. And Gerrard, I know it. I know he hates it. He hates that he's lost to Arsenal. But, you know, I for once, I agree. I agree. Arsenal, you celebrate that all you want. Because they're games that if you'd have lost, everyone would have turned around and gone, ha!
Yeah, exactly.
And not being funny.
Because you didn't. Because you haven't bottled it. They hate it.
Look at Villa's squad. How much are they paying someone like Coutinho to be there? How much money do they spend in the summer? But that's the thing. It's just like, well, you can say that, oh, Arsenal are a bigger team than Villa and they've spent money, etc. It's like, well, but so have you. You're at home. You're in front of 45, 50,000 fans or whatever it is. So why can't you celebrate in a way
with? Didn't you, Scott? And I'll tell you what, if you do win the same or similar fashion as to how we went there and won, would you not celebrate like that?
When it means that you've got the potential to get back to where you wanted to see your club, you celebrate how you want to. Like, if it means you could watch Arsenal again on a Tuesday or a Wednesday night with that Champions League theme at Emirates Stadium again, I'm sorry, you celebrate it.
Not being funny, I think it was Blackpool versus Chelsea at Blackpool, just as they got promoted. And that was Ian Holloway playing unbelievable football with about, you know, a squad worth 50 quid and, you know, like a pint of beer down the pub type, you know, and Blackpool played absolutely incredible. And I think Mourinho was the manager of Chelsea at the time. All these millionaires, multi-millionaires turned up with these, you know, expecting to win that game. And they had a fight and Blackpool should have won that game. Chelsea scored a last minute goal and Mourinho like celebrated like hell. That I just bet. Shows how much it means to him. And after the game, he was just like, do you know what? I couldn't do what Holloway's just done with this squad. And he said, that shows. And I was happy that I beat this squad of players. And that's a full credit to that. It doesn't show disrespect. It shows credit to the other team when you get a narrow 1-0 win or win away from home or whatever.
But it's even like when Palace, I'm guessing, Jason, you celebrated that draw with Man City like you'd won the FA Cup. Well, because it's Man City.
100%. Teams like Palace, you go in.
It's two fingers to the big teams. Yeah. It's two fingers up to those big teams.
Pep Guardiola coming out and saying, "Oh, the grass." Well, Palace play every week, and we play beautiful football. So, you know, some managers are respectful, like Scott says. Mourinho is normally fairly complimentary, or Cossi, sorry, is fairly complimentary when it comes to stuff like that. But this whole tribalism about, oh, you can't celebrate a last-minute winner. Oh, you're Arsenal. You can't celebrate a last-minute winner against Villa. What the hell are you doing? Like, it's a joke. It's a football game of 90 minutes. Any team in the world that scores a 90th-minute winner or a late winner has the right to celebrate like nobody. Like, it's just ridiculous.
I saw the other yesterday, West Ham fans, their defence was, oh, Spurs are celebrating it because it's their cup final. It's like, all right, fair enough. Coming from a West Ham fan, but all right, yeah, that's the way they're going to be because they're embarrassed that they've just witnessed what they've witnessed. I bet you any money there were Villa fans before that, like, I reckon we could win this game. It's Arsenal. When the narrative fits, you can act like you act, but when it actually follows the script, you don't like it. And that's how you want to respond.
When the narrative fits is spot on.
It made me laugh with the FA Cup with Brighton fans, surprisingly, or anyone with the teams that Palace have played throughout the FA Cup, Hartlepool, Stokes, this, that, and the other. Anyone.
Fucking draw.
It's a draw. It's an open draw. Yeah.
One, it's a draw. Two, all of those games, apart from arguably Hartlepool and Millwall, they were and Stoke, they were all tough games because in the FA Cup, anything can happen. You know, it's one of them, but you don't control the draw. You don't turn around and say, oh, that's an easy draw. Millwall gave us the game of our life. Stoke even played brilliantly against us at Selhurst.
Like, do you think anyone looks at Wigan or Portsmouth FA Cup wins and goes, yeah, but the draw they got was easy? Oh, no one gives a shit.
You've got to go to Wembley. You have that.
Exactly.
That's one of the bigger pressure games at Wembley.
If anything, them smaller games, look how many teams get knocked out by those smaller teams.
Look at Boreham.
Well, we love the FA Cup.
That's what football should be about. But all these, like, keyboard warrior fans, you know, you shouldn't be celebrating that. It's just like, oh.
Do you know what? Go and wet your bed, you prick.
Nice. So, before we move on to the other teams, come on then. Jason Cook and Cossie. I mean, firstly, you know, Cookie, we've already alluded to the game in itself. Where are you at with Klopp's comments?
Stupid comments. stupid,
arrogant,
narcissistic, arrogant comments. I'll tell you for why. Let's look at the Palace starting 11 randomly that played Man City. And we'll talk about now the current situation. Three of our back four, Anderson, a fully-fledged Denmark international. Guia has just been called up to England. Mitchell just called up to England. Conor Gallagher called up to England. Kiarte, Ofcom champion with Senegal. He should know because Mane played with him as well. Schlupp, fully-fledged international with Ghana. Zaha, Ivory Coast. Elise, under-21 international, but fully-fledged international, now under-21s for France. Mateta, not so. I'll go to the bench. Benteke, starting striker for Belgium. Ayew, Ghana. Edouard in the French squad. What's his point? How many players did I name there? 8, 9?
Well, can I also just say that Burnley, he used Burnley as his reference, right? Because that's the game that's coming up about, oh, I bet Burnley haven't got any. Do you know all three of their goalkeepers have been called up? All three. Like that to me, I mean, you've got Burnley have got, surprisingly, and this is where, again, it comes into an arrogance. If you're not playing for one of the South American countries or the top European, you're not on international duty. They don't take into account that some of these players get called up to Azerbaijan, Serbia, Macedonia, Liechtenstein, Norway. Burnley have got like 7 players called up to international duty. I just think it's so bad that you can't even do your research, that you use a club that clearly had. I mean, it doesn't take you 2 seconds to see Nick Pope got called up.
But this is the thing about the top four clubs and why the whole Super League thing came up and everything else. There's always something that the top clubs are doing that they feel so hard done by, they want to deny the lower clubs every chance of success. It's an absolute joke. In fact, you know what? I'd go one step further than that and just say he basically disrespected the foundations of English football. Because let's 100%. Look at Leicester and the success they've had over the years when they won the Premier League. What would he say that one? None of them are fully-fledged internationals. Well, they are now. If they weren't before, they are now.
Don't you think it's a bit contradictory that managers are asking for 5 subs when they wouldn't even field a starting 11 during COVID?
Oh, he said something on that, didn't he, Klopp?
I'm not labelling fans in this, but the arrogance of managers and owners of the big so-called Big Six, it stinks. Every time a Palace or a Brentford or a Norwich get a result against the big team, it's always, oh, they were lucky, you know, that team had an off day. Why can't it be spoken about that actually Zed other team, the team played well, the players were brilliant, the players were quality on the day? With City, Gary Neville, one of the first things he said, I think, after the Palace result was, oh, you know, Palace was just lucky. Yeah, we were lucky, but we also played well and we had 2 or 3 half chances to nick it. But it's never about the endeavour or the attitude or the aptitude of the other team. It's always about how the top team just had an off day.
Not being funny as well, I can't find the latest number of players that Norwich have had called up, but even little old Norwich, 7 months ago when the last international games happened in the last fixtures, we had 15 players on international duty. And that's little old Norwich City. So,
but that's never spoken about, though.
Exactly. And it's a complete joke. It's disrespecting nations as well. You know, like, I know I've been criticising Pukki this season, but it's mainly because of the lack of service he's had. And I think he's an incredible player for us. And I love the guy. He's Finland's highest ever scorer. So you want to talk about disrespecting nations as well as individuals, as well as the smaller clubs. 15 players away for international duty from us, as well as a top scorer, as well as players that are playing in the Scotland team. I know it's easy to slate them as well, but they were fighting for positions like just as much as any other team. And it's just like, well, why do you have to be so arrogant? Why do you have to be?
If you're Liverpool with 10 first-team players on international duty, or Norwich with 15, the fact still remains that those players fly somewhere, have extra mileage, play extra minutes. Whether you're Liverpool Football Club or Norwich, it's one and the same.
When he talked about our international duty, Liverpool lose Mane or Salah, they've got Diaz, Jota, Firmino, Mane or Salah, depending on who they've lost. Norwich go and lose Pukki. Burnley go and lose Weghorst. Game over.
There's no replacements. That's exactly what I was about to say.
You might as well call it a day there and then.
Exactly that. Not even think about it. You just named, what, three or four players that they can just replace, like, click of the finger. Not the small teams cannot do that. So where's the luxury of it?
I just thought it was really, really sour, to be honest. And it's one of those where you're just like, oh, that didn't show you in a good light at all, no, mate, to be honest.
His overriding feeling is about the five subs, right? I tell you now, if City had the benefit of five subs against Palace, that game doesn't end 0-0. That game ends up in City nicking it 1-0. That is the sole purpose of Klopp, Pep. When they talk about having five substitutes, it's because they don't like it when they drop points unexpectedly against teams they're supposed to beat. As Cossie says, you know, Palace loses Zaha and have to sub him off for fatigue. We don't have like-for-like replacement. Same for Norwich. Pukki comes off, you know, on the 80th minute. They don't have a Pukki replacement. City, however, if they want to take off Phil Foden or Mahrez, oh yeah, we'll just sling on Gabriel Jesus. It's a travesty. It's a joke. It's an absolute joke. And this is, for me, where if we're not careful, football will end up eating itself.
What's more of a joke, Klopp's comments or the fact that no trains are running on FA Cup semi-final week from Man City, Liverpool, from Manchester and Liverpool to London?
I mean, that is also a joke. That is also a joke.
Oh, there's no train services running from Manchester and Liverpool to London.
Fairness to Everton fans, it's the same for them. There was no trains that got them to Selhurst on time for the kickoff because they were handed a 12:30 kickoff.
Doesn't that just sum up the people that are in charge of not only the country, but, you know, just the organisations, the just everything about it is just a bit, it was just very laughable, isn't it? It's just like head and hands, what can you say?
Surely the first thing the FA should do is get on the phone to the, you know, National Rail and say, right, this is what our planned dates are for the semi-final. By the way, does it clash with any major road work, you know, rail works or whatever, or service?
It's because they don't give a shit. They just don't give a shit.
Well, the other double game week team was Spurs. And for once, I'm talking about both results in a positive manner. A 2-0 win away to Brighton and a 3-1 win against West Ham. And of course, the excuses came out with the 120 minutes that West Ham had to play, as though that was our problem. So Spurs win both fixtures. I mean, again, we'll talk about it from Spurs' perspective and then we can talk about West Ham and Brighton. I mean, it's weekly tradition that Jason has his Brighton segment in the old squeaky voice. With Spurs right now, obviously, with Arsenal as well, how they're doing, it's going down to the wire. Sky Sports are clearly holding the old fixture cook to one side because all they want is that massive build-up. To be honest, both games, for once, Spurs didn't look troubled at all. Brighton was an easy win. West Ham was a very easy win. I heard another West Ham fan say that it was flattering that we won 3-1. And I was like, Jesus Christ, are you having a laugh? I'm not going to say that, you know, we didn't catch him on a bad weekend off the back of Europa League. But, well, if you want to associate yourselves as a big club, handle it.
Exactly.
And, you know, again, I heard fans say, oh, and we had one earlier. Someone tweeted TFD saying it was such a bad critique from a debate show. When West Ham were nearly relegated 3 years ago. And I was sorry, you're not a big club when it fits the narrative then, right?
In fairness to West Ham, right, if they could have handpicked one game after that 120-minute, I reckon Tottenham might have been one of them because they always seem to up a level or two when Tottenham come to town.
So they've really got nothing, no leg to stand on with that. Me.
No, they got Son on a very bad day. He was on fire. I mean, Kurt Zouma.
everyone was cheering.
I had to watch this a few times, and I was going to rip Son to shreds for it. But then I realised who kicked the ball at him, and I thought, actually, do you know what? I'll give you that one. That was quite.
If you're going to choose your moment.
I don't know if you noticed as well. There was obviously that sign. That classic sign. But Spurs fans were also throwing around the stadium, loads of blow-up orange cats.
Brilliant. Yeah. The thing is, it's what Kurt Zouma did is not a laugh of matter, and he's a massive bellend. However, the way that football fans then react to it makes it a laugh of matter, because you think, do you know what, Kurt? You absolute bellend.
He shouldn't be allowed on the football field.
Absolutely spot on. The fact that he's still playing is a fucking joke in itself.
He's been charged as well.
Exactly. It's such a joke. So football fans giving him shit, him scoring own goals and playing shit is everything that vile human deserves.
Yeah.
But again, it's that example, isn't it? You know, if you want to be a big club, you've got to learn how to handle these. And that comes back to the point we made about Arteta's comments. You know, if you're already moaning about the fixtures when you don't even play European football, God forbid. But yeah, good week for Spurs. Brighton, shall we go on mute, boys?
Well.
You know it's going to be a good rant when he starts off with,
Spurs should be reported to RSPCA because abusing seagulls like that is not the one. Seagull Simon does not deserve any of that. But as we're here, should we just talk about the dismal run that the great Messiah, Graham Potter, has led them on since their great feats have been above Crystal Palace? Anyone care to guess what the stat hangman is for?
Well, Brighton are bottom of the table after 5 games below Norwich. 1 goal scored, 11 goals conceded.
Exactly that, and they've lost 6 consecutive league matches for the first time since 2006, and that was the season they got relegated from the Championship.
Not that you've put any research into that at all.
I'd also like to point out that for all their talk, they are now below Palace by a point, and, well, they're just irrelevant, aren't they? And I'm sorry, lads, but I think they've actually cost you big time there, to be fair. I'm quite looking forward to the meal.
You scored 13 more goals than them. That's...
Brighton, wow. After 10 games, are also bottom of the table. This is actually, in all seriousness, this is manager sacking form. I'm not going to lie. 10 games, 6 goals scored, 16 goals conceded, 6 points. Everton have a better record in 10 games than Brighton. Well, everyone does.
The thing I was going to say then is his early season form.
Yep. This is my point about... I think clubs, if you have a bad downturn in form in the second half of the season... you picked the best time to have a bad downturn in form. Because if he'd have had this run of form in the first 15 games of the season, he'd have been sacked. No doubt about it. Because this is literally, I mean, you've gone from being fifth to 13th in probably, what, 10 games? Yep. So... I know we laugh about them every week, but I'd imagine this isn't a laughing matter for them at the moment. They won't admit it, but I guarantee you, if you'd have asked a Brighton fan to put a bet on that they would finish above Newcastle after 10 games into the season, they would have laughed and said, you might as well give me the money now. But I'm sorry, boys, you are 2 points away from being overtaken by Newcastle. So, I mean, I didn't see this coming at all, but yeah, you've got to be looking at next season now going, shit in hell. If this team can put in this run of form, they might need a bit of investment. So I sent you out all the fixtures for Man United, Spurs and Arsenal before today's show. We can't talk about Man United. They didn't play a game. Didn't that feel nice when you ain't got to talk about Man United? But we will in this little 2-minute part. Bearing in mind there's one big fixture, you know, with Spurs, Arsenal to come. How do we see it playing out? Is it Arsenal's to lose? Or do you think Spurs have got the easier run in that they should nab it? Or can you see Arsenal and Spurs battering each other so much that Man United just go sailing past them and finish fourth?
I don't see United doing anything. I think it will come down to, ironically, that Spurs-Arsenal game that Sky are building up. But you have to say on paper, when you look at Spurs fixtures, Conte seems to have gotten playing and the bit between their teeth, and I can't see. I think Arsenal, because their depth of squad, have a slip up or two in them. I do.
Well, looking at the fixtures, how many points do you see Arsenal getting come the end of April, and how many points do you see Spurs getting come the end of April? That is the biggie, because momentum is key. If all of a sudden the club have run 12 points in five games and the others got seven, then all of a sudden in that run, aren't you? That momentum is with you. So it's key. It is key because Arsenal are in a great run. And that Villa game, and that's further why, and to be honest, I forgot to mention this. I thought about why did Arsenal celebrate that so much. And I think it's because everyone, including myself, thought Arsenal have got an implosion ready to happen. And after losing that Liverpool game, we all thought potentially, yeah, this is going to be them hitting that downturn in form now, because they always implode on themselves. Them winning that shows that they've overcome that. So that April running for Arsenal, when it hits the 20th, starts to get a little bit challenging.
Well, I'm not taking the piss here, Cookie, but I can quite conceivably, between now, so with April fixtures in mind, I can quite conceivably see Arsenal getting at most 5 points. And I'll tell you how.
What, against Southampton and Brighton?
You'll beat Brighton. I think you'll beat Brighton.
Both of them.
Southampton away. It depends what Southampton turn up.
We like playing Southampton.
So I'm saying you'll get a point at Palace.
I've got us a point at you lot.
I think you'll get a point at Palace. I think you'll probably get a point at Southampton, because I think Southampton might
have won. I think we win that one.
And I think you'll beat Brighton. And then, as Scott says, Chelsea away will be tough. United, well, let's face it, United aren't going to do anything against Liverpool. Liverpool will be 2-4 by half-time.
I think we'll beat United. I've got us getting at least 10 points from April.
Okay, so Arsenal beat Man United. They beat Southampton. That's 6 points. They beat Brighton, 9. Maybe get a draw against Palace, worst case. That's 10.
Chelsea.
I'll say free hit, but I mean, it's a Chelsea team, but you know what them games are like. So let's say Arsenal get 10. How many points are Spurs getting?
Depends what Newcastle turn up.
That's the toughest game.
If it's the one that Everton played, then you'll be all right, but...
Villa down was the toughest game away, no?
Depends. Yeah, maybe. Coutinho, I mean, the fact that we've got Newcastle at home, maybe I don't Villa. I mean, what are we thinking minimum?
12 points, I reckon. I think the only
I say you'll match us.
Looking at the last game of the season, Tottenham are fucked.
Got Burnley and Norwich, didn't we, our last two?
I say you'll match us in April.
I think you get 12 comfortably. I think you beat Newcastle at home. I think Villa's the one you struggle. I think you'll beat Brighton. I think you'll beat Brentford. And I think you'll beat Leicester, because they'll be stuck in Europa League, Conference League stuff as well by that point, I think. So I think it's a comfortable 12 points. And that's assuming Villa's a banana skin. If not, that's a clean sweep of 5 wins. Conte is a manager. And you look at those games and the gap in the games. There's a week between each of those games. I don't see him letting up.
I think there's a loss there. I've not seen evidence that we can maintain. I think there's a slip up there for sure. Well, that'd be it then, wouldn't it? Because that would put Arsenal on 64 and Spurs on 63. And then you've got the North London derby. That would probably be where I reckon the North London derby will slot in. They won't put it in before Man City Liverpool, because all the build ups to that in April.
Just in time for another lockdown when the COVID new variant of COVID comes in, yeah.
No doubt.
If it's between that your game of Liverpool, you know, it's game on, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a big game, I think, for time, and it'll be a nighttime game, no doubt, under the light. They'll do something with it for sure. Well, I mean, look, we've got 3 more games to run through briefly. We spoke about Everton a little bit earlier on. If it wasn't for that FA Cup loss, or smashing, as Jason would like me to call it, you'd have probably said Everton had a good start, because they won a game I did not see them winning. And you saw how much it meant when we talk about celebrating a win. That was the, you know, the loudest I've heard Goodison Park for a while. When it was Rafa out chance.
It was the 99th minute, thanks to thanks to that guy coming on the pitch and locking himself to the post.
Well, we haven't even spoken about that, but I mean, let's not give him the attention. You know, he goes from being the villain in the Batman to taking himself to a post in the fixture, but
that guy come on to punch him.
I mean, there's not a lot to say from a Newcastle perspective, but I think they would have hoped they would have won that game, catching Everton on a bad day. It was a win. Must have been a bit tough for you, Kos, because I think you were always hoping that, you know, Everton might be, bearing in mind Brentford and Leeds, you know, were starting to pull away a little bit. You were hoping that Everton might stay in, but...
I still think they're sort of going to be around that relegation zone. I still think they're massively in trouble.
I
think they're big in trouble. I think there's... I can't see them getting a lot of points between now and the end of the season.
Same.
Go through their fixtures.
I think, in regards to Everton's league form and their fixtures coming up, I think we'd be having a different conversation if that FA Cup game didn't happen, because I think they'd have the momentum of that Newcastle win. But given the way they got absolutely rinsed against Palace and given Lampard's very, very odd outburst post-game, I think they're in deep, deep trouble. I don't see them getting through it. I don't. I think they're in banging trouble.
I don't think they... They haven't got enough points now. They need to be sitting on where, ironically, where Brighton are, 33, 34 now.
Well, they've got...
I can't see them getting any...
They've got West Ham away, Burnley away. I think they get 1 point at most at those. They've got United at Goodison Park. I think Man United will hound them. They've still got to play Palace. They've still got to play Liverpool at Anfield. They've still got to play Leicester. Still got to play Chelsea. Leicester twice even. And then Brentford and Arsenal. I just don't... I don't see it. I really, really don't.
They need a win on the last day. We can relegate them.
Put it this way, I don't see quite conceivably...
Oh, relegate Frank Lampard, that'd be quite a nice feeling.
That'd be lovely. But I don't see, this is an outrageous statement, I don't see them winning a game for the rest of the season. Maybe one of West Ham or Burnley, but apart from that,
I'm with you. I can't see them winning another game.
Yeah, it's bad. Bad times. One of the other teams, Leeds.
What a game.
Wow.
What a result.
That was incredible. Everything about that. Again, that's my jealousy when it comes. Whenever I see a team like Leeds pick out performance
that's
like that
the
when they're 2-0 down.
Of the Premier League showing into
amazing. To go away from home 2-0 down and to come back and win that 3-2, that is a huge credit to Leeds United. Fair fucking play.
Even with the injuries they had as well, because they had two or three players injured, they lost Bamford as well, didn't they?
I massively felt for Bamford there. Like I've never been a huge fan of his, but you see how much it means. And the thing is, I think in a way he's a little bit hated because he's a bit posh and he's just like, well, just because he's educated doesn't mean he should be hated. And he came off with tears in his eyes and thinking, do you know what? I'm actually gutted for you, mate.
There's an underlining factor. Now that the Messiah's gone, you know, I try not to say his name, get upset, as I know still to this day. Mm-hmm. You do then start to sit back and go, fair play to Leeds. If they do stay up, considering they've been without the players they've been without this season.
I mean, the next two is Southampton and Watford. I can see them getting 4 points from them, the way they're playing at the minute, with the confidence after the way they come back against Wolves.
And the final game, as we wrap up the show, was Leicester and Brentford. Leicester 2, Brentford 1. I know Cossie comes off mute for Brentford.
Now, to be fair, I did... I'm not going to turn around and say that I'm a genius for predicting that. Yeah, everyone saw that coming. However, their one goal wasn't a penalty and, yeah, fair play to them. 5 minutes to go, they gave them a chance. But I want to come on and talk about the two Leicester goals, to be honest, because both of them were absolute screamers. The Brighton wall should have jumped for Madison's, but not take anything away from it. That was absolutely superb. And their first goal was just an absolute belter. And yeah, that's two good goals to see. That's what you want in the Premier League. So good game, expected result, two screamers, and a goal for Brentford that wasn't a penalty. So
what's Tony got himself in trouble for again?
Have you seen that? He has got some sort of problem from his childhood, because I don't know if he was bullied at school or if something happened at school where he just feels like he's got something to prove to every single person and every single thing. Oh, I've got money, I've got this, oh, fuck Brentford, you know. Yeah, you're Brentford's star man that scores tap-ins and penalties. You may think that you're the dog's bollocks, but if you get that big move and you're, again, a small fish in a big pond because you couldn't make it at Newcastle and all of a sudden you're scoring some penalties in the Championship, mate, know your level. Yes, you're going to be richer than any of us ever, but who are you proving that to? You know, like, oh, like if I was a professional footballer in the Premier League, I wouldn't turn around and be like, oh yeah, fuck Brentford, no one's special. It's just like, who the hell do you think you are? Who are you trying to prove? What have you got to prove?
Seriously, just grow up, you prick.
Really bad, really bad. He must know after the first video you don't say anything like that. And he did.
I don't think, I think Cossie said, I think he's one of these where his ego... I know some people like that, where their ego is so inflated.
Portuguese player. Oh, dear. Well, we come to the end of that segment anyway. Leicester Brentford, we weren't going to talk about for too much. Got to give Cookie 20 minutes to name his 8 positions that he's moving.
Oh, lads, hang on. Seagull Simon's just called me. He can't wait. So he says, I've got to read this to you now. It's a little poem he wrote about his beloved bride.
Oh, God.
Seagull Simon, I've really twatted Brighton fans. This one's for you, apparently. They've got Super Graham Potter. He knows exactly what they need. Pass it sideways at the back. They really can't attack, but they'll say they beat you on XG.
How long did it take for him to come up with that?
Well done, Brighton. Well done.
Right, well, no predictions for international break. So we go straight to who's up or down then. Now, the way it's going to work is this is the last time you can move any team up or down. If from next week, a team is then on, well, it won't be next week, it'll be a week after. If a team is then on 31 games, you will no longer be able to move them intentionally. Okay? So, Jace, Cossie, myself, we can only move one team because we did it last week. Cookie, you've got 8 positions you can move. You can attach as many positions to one team as you want. You can move one team up 4, move 8
you
if you want.
You've got to 31 games, so this ain't our final tables yet.
No, it's not our final table until all teams have played 31 games. So, say for example, 15 of them have played 31, but the other 5 haven't. You can still move those 5 if you want to.
Okay.
Once they've hit that 30 game mark and gone past that, you can't do them anymore. So, at the moment, none of them are, but you can see Brentford, Leeds, West Ham, Wolves, from their next game, you won't be able to move them anymore. So if they're not in a good position now, I'd probably say have a look.
Okay,
so
I got it.
Let's get our 3 out the way, and then we'll hand it over to Cook, who's got to make some drastic changes. So does anyone want to go first? Because I haven't even had a look.
I've got Brentford as 13th, because obviously I did it from the table from when I started doing the pod. And I need to put them down. However, they're on 30. However, teams below them have got fewer games than they have. So right now, I'm going to put Brentford down one place to where Southampton are on my table. And then hopefully, by the time we get to 31 games, the teams below them can overtake them and Brentford will be in the bottom 3, as I'm going to stick to my stubbornness.
I'm going to move Newcastle from 17th to 16th, which does put Brentford in 17th. And then I might have to tackle Everton after that, because I'm conscious that they are a little too high, but they've got a lot of games in hand. So I've got enough time to still move them. So yeah, that's my move. So Newcastle to 16th, Brentford to 17th.
Where do I start with mine? I've got Leeds in 10th, Everton 11th, Newcastle 18th. So I am going to put Wolves up 1 to 11th, and that will force Everton down to
12th. Now we come to the big one. Cook, 8 positions. How are you doing it?
Right, so unfortunately, Costi, I've got you bottom. I have got Brentford and 19th.
Not having that, mate. Not having that. What?
I have got Brentford and 19th, and I'm not moving them because I've got so many others. And what I think will happen, I'm moving Everton down 3 from 15th to 18th. I'm moving Newcastle from 17th to 14th, which pushes Leeds down to 15th, and Burnley staying 16th.
Ooh.
He sounds like a jammy twat, this one. That's pretty
much... Yeah, well, I'm just about in there. Palace, I've got 10th. Southampton, 11th. Brighton, 13th. Leicester, 12th. Villa, I had 9th. And this is where I'm a bit...
This man's a con artist. These 5 moves shouldn't be allowed. He's already got it nailed on, pretty much.
I haven't moved any of them middle ones from Villa to Brighton.
Well, you don't need to, do you? Jesus Christ.
I don't need to. This is it. I've nailed that. I'm going to swap the top two because I've got City winning it at the minute, but I think Liverpool are going to win it.
Ooh, big.
I'll go with 7th and 8th because the last one I've gone with my heart. And I'm going to swap Wolves and West Ham because I've got West Ham in 8th and Wolves 7th. So I'm going to swap them two. I've got... I'm going to put Arsenal 4th and Man United 5th and Spurs in 6th. But again, if we've got till 31 games, that will change.
I've had that for... I've not changed that for weeks. Arsenal, Man United and Spurs in that order. So am I right in thinking you've got Norwich, Brentford and... Watford
in the bottom 3, yeah.
Well, that's who's up or down then. So, as I said, no predictions. So, every position counts with who's up or down going towards the end of the season points. I'm sure we can do something funny with how that works out with the points and whatnot. We'll call that a day then. Episode 42, done and dusted. Pleasure as always having all 4 of us on the show at the same time. Not as many games to talk about, so we didn't have to organise it, but we handled it pretty well. Next week will be a slightly different show. We will have that laid out, no doubt, before the Monday.
England are playing Ivory Coast. That means we can talk about Gui, Mitchell, Gallagher, Zaha, all in one game. It's the Palace Derby.
Taking over the world here, boys.
We'll try and come up with something fun for episode 43 because we're not going to sit here for 2 hours and discuss those fixtures because, let's be honest, all we want is our beloved clubs back playing week in, week out when it's international break, if it's not the World Cup or the Euros. So for now, boys, I'll let you go and I will see a couple of you next week, and Cookie will see you the week after, no doubt. And yeah, enjoy the rest of your evening.
Cheers, lads.
See you later.
Thank you for listening to Total Football Debate podcast. We hope you enjoyed this episode. It would mean the world to us if you could spread the word regarding our show and leave us a rating so we know how we're doing. Also, please, please, please interact with us on social media, especially on Twitter at TFDebate, where we'd love to hear your thoughts and opinions on any of the topics we discuss each week. You never know, we may even get you on the show to say hello. Thanks again for listening and keep an ear out for the next episode.